When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
After weeks of military buildup, why did Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine seem to take so many by surprise?
I think the West did underestimate his determination to use force, not merely to bite off a chunk of a neighboring country, but to do a full-fledged invasion.
Plus, President Biden nominates the first black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson.
A daughter of former public school teachers, a proven consensus builder, an accomplished lawyer, a distinguished jurist.
It's Friday, February 25th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Russia is continuing its land and air assault on Ukraine, and Russian troops are closing in on the capital of Kyiv. Ukrainian officials reported gunfire in several neighborhoods north of the capital in what they said were clashes with Russian infiltrators. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky released a video of himself after dark standing in the front of the presidential headquarters with government officials all in fatigues, saying he was remaining to defend the country, quelching rumors from Russian media that he had fled the city. According to the United Nations, some 100,000 Ukrainians have been displaced, and tens of thousands continue to head toward the borders with Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia. Our senior reporter, Drew Hinshaw, spoke with a Ukrainian father and daughter, Dmytro and Marta Romanian, who have been helping people cross over into Poland.
How long are people is it taking people to get across?
By cross?
Yeah.
By cross, from minimum from 10 hours to 24, 26.
Yeah.
It's... 5 minutes ago, we organized the shipment from here to Warsaw. The women with children who crossed 20 kilometers that coming to here. 20 kilometers with children.
Yeah.
With child.
She walked.
Yeah, walked. Walked 20 kilometers.
Marta says her family was on a ski vacation in Austria when they heard about the invasion.
My brother, that is in Ukraine now, he is in Lviv. He called and said it's war, like it started, and we had to take our clothes and we went straight away to Ukraine. We wanted to go like to our hometown, but we decided to stay here and help here people because there we won't do nothing.
Drew says the stream of refugees has increased dramatically and is not letting up.
When I was here yesterday, it was two or three times the normal daily traffic. Today, it is just like an exponential, huge increase. There's a huge number of people who left the capital and other parts of central and eastern Ukraine when the bombs started falling, essentially. Those people have not even really materialized in any big number yet at the border. I have to believe this is just going to become a bigger and bigger bottleneck. It is a crisis. Nobody is feeding these people. It's cold. They're hungry.
In a rare move, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the U.S. will sanction Russian President Vladimir Putin, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, and members of Russia's national security team. The move follows similar sanctions by the European Union to freeze any European assets of Putin and Lavrov. While former U.S. officials say it's intended to politically isolate Putin, Russian experts say Putin's wealth is largely held in associates' names, which could blunt their impact. Earlier today, a Kremlin spokesman told reporters that Moscow would be willing to send a delegation to Belarus for talks with the Ukrainian government. We'll have more on the potential for those talks and the two leaders who are in the standoff later in the show. U.S. stocks rose on news of potential talks between Russia and Ukraine, despite scant details. The Dow gained more than 800 points, posting its best session of the year after a turbulent week across markets. The Dow ended the week down 0.06%. The S&P 500 ended the week adding 0.8%, and the Nasdaq gained 1.1%. In an historic nomination, President Biden has tapped Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to become the first black woman to serve on the Supreme Court.
I promised the process would be rigorous, that I would select a nominee worthy of Justice Breyer's legacy of excellence and decency. Someone extremely qualified, with a brilliant legal mind, with the utmost character and integrity, which are equally as important.
Our White House reporter Ken Thomas says Jackson's nomination could get some pushback from Senate Republicans, but is likely to unite Democrats.
Judge Jackson is coming from the federal bench in the D.C. Circuit, which typically handles very technical, often dry legal disputes involving federal agencies. Her record is not full of cases on hot-button issues like abortion, for example. So she doesn't have the kind of track record, at least at this stage, that might create controversy in a Supreme Court confirmation hearing. One of the things you're likely to hear a lot about is just her experience on criminal justice issues. If she's confirmed, she would be the first justice with significant experience in criminal defense since Justice Thurgood Marshall retired from the court back in 1991. She served as a federal public defender. She also served on the U.S. Sentencing Commission. At the time, she helped reduce sentences for drug offenders. And she's also just someone with a lot of federal experience.
If confirmed by the Senate, Jackson would replace Justice Stephen Breyer, who will be retiring at the end of the current term. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is changing its metrics for assessing COVID-19 risk and easing its guidelines on masking, including at schools. The CDC says it will break counties down into low, medium, or high risk based on new cases per 100,000 residents in the past 7 days, hospital admissions, and hospital bed occupancy. The agency says the new guidelines reflect its heightened focus on minimizing severe disease and limiting pressures on the healthcare system. In areas with high risk, the CDC still recommends wearing masks in public indoor settings, including schools. But as of Thursday, nearly three-quarters of the U.S. population lived in places where the CDC does not advise indoor masking broadly, according to the new metrics. And Johnson & Johnson and three of the nation's biggest drug distributors have agreed to a landmark $25 billion settlement with a majority of the states that would resolve thousands of lawsuits over the opioid epidemic. The deal was approved by J&J, AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health, and McKesson after a threshold number of state and local governments agreed to participate. The funding, which will be paid out over a number of years, will go to healthcare and drug treatment programs, according to a group of lawyers who negotiated on behalf of state and local governments. Coming up, did the West misread Putin?
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
For weeks, political leaders have been meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin and his administration, trying to prevent the attacks on Ukraine that have roiled the country for the past few days. This month, French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz each met with Putin in Moscow. And internationally, there have been repeated calls for diplomacy. But even as Moscow continued to claim that it had no intention of attacking Ukraine, it was building up its military presence on the Ukrainian border in plain sight. Now, the speed and scale of the attack seem to have taken many, including the Ukrainian president, by surprise. So, did the West misread the signs? And Putin? Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Michael Gordon. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Michael, let's start with a big question. Did the West underestimate or misread Putin?
I think President Putin's intentions have always been clear. For years, he's been complaining about the terms on which the Cold War was brought to an end. He said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was one of the greatest tragedies in his lifetime because it left ethnic Russians outside the border of Russia. He's railed against NATO expansion. He's made his concerns known. So that's not a surprise. But I think the West did underestimate his determination to use force, not merely to bite off a chunk of a neighboring country, but to do a full-fledged invasion. It didn't anticipate his determination and really audacity to pursue his goals.
What do we know about why Putin is doing this, what his motivations are? What do experts and observers think he wants to accomplish here?
Well, I was living in Russia when Putin came to power as prime minister and later president. And he is, as a former KGB official, he sees the world very much as a zero-sum game. If something is to the West's advantage, he sees it as a detriment to Russia. And he has set about first to consolidate his own power within Russia vis-a-vis the oligarchs in the country, which he did. And then secondarily, not so much to recreate the Soviet Union, but to build up Russia's stature in the world and to the extent he can. And he's done that through sending Russian troops into parts of Georgia. He annexed Crimea in 2014. He moved Russian troops into Donbass. Internationally, he intervened in Syria. But Ukraine has always been the big prize for him. He's never liked the fact that it's been drifting to the West and that much of its population wanted to be anchored in the European Union and not in the Russian configuration. And now he has the military power to stop it. And also he's calculating that the West is not going to put up much of a fight.
Are there greater fears now that this doesn't end for him with Ukraine?
Well, I think Ukraine's going to be a handful for him. The American experience in invading countries shows that it's one thing to topple a regime, which is what he's trying to do in the next week, and put his own people in. And it's another thing to control events afterwards. And so he's taken on that task. And also he is going to face economic sanctions, but he correctly surmised that nobody in the West was going to fight for Ukraine, that we're not really going to give them powerful weapons. They gave them battlefield weapons, some anti-tank weapons, nothing that would really make a huge difference. The West would primarily resort to economic sanctions to try to punish him for this acquisition. And he's amassed a reserve of more than $600 billion. And his calculation is that that will be sufficient for him to ride out the storm, and that over time, the unity of the West will weaken, and the determination of at least some members of the EU and some European countries and countries globally to enforce sanctions will fade away.
Let's talk about Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky. He's had an unconventional path to the presidency and is now leading his country through a war. What can you tell us about his leadership during this crisis, how it's being viewed by outsiders, and the expectations that have now been placed on him?
Well, he's been in a terrible position because the West put Ukraine in a difficult position. In 2008, the Bush administration pushed hard to include Ukraine and in Georgia and NATO, and Germany and France had reservations, those being that it would alienate Russia. So there was a compromise reached where NATO said one day Ukraine will be a member, but just not now. And that, in effect, painted a target on Ukraine's back. And it was like waving a red flag in front of a bull for Moscow. And for Ukraine, it was the worst of both worlds. They weren't in NATO, and so they didn't get the protection that a nation gets for being in NATO. On the other hand, they were identified as a potential NATO member, and that became a great concern for Russia. So he inherited a difficult situation. Also, Ukraine is a country that struggled with its own corruption and building a state since it was a former Soviet republic. In his current role as the leader, he's been concerned with not engendering panic in Ukraine. And as a consequence, his armed forces were not as ready as they might have been to deal with the Russian attack. They didn't really fully mobilize until the very end because he was worried about creating panic and hurting economic prospects in his country. In fact, he and his aides sometimes criticize the U.S. for being alarmist and saying that his country might be overrun. So, yes, he's been in a difficult position. Nobody in the world is going to fight with him, which makes them feel very much alone. But he did misread Russia's intentions, and at least in his public statements, he discounted the severity of the threat he faced and the willingness of Putin to mount an all-out invasion of his country.
Zelensky has called on other European nations to help them take up the fight in defense of Ukraine. What does it say that so far none of the NATO countries have answered that call in a bigger way?
It shows that the Russians have succeeded in one of their principal aims. which is to shut the door to NATO expansion to the east. And NATO's formal position is that when Putin asked them to agree to this, is that NATO maintains an open door policy. Well, the Russians have shut it. There's no former Soviet republic, not Georgia, not any other republic in, to the east or Central Asia that's going to take the risk of aspiring to join NATO following this demonstration of Russian support. Ironically, there is the possibility NATO could expand to the north because Sweden and Finland, which are not NATO members, there are at least voices in those countries, if not the governments themselves, had have been raising the question. But, you know, the Ukrainians are, in terms of the military confrontation, they're alone. There's a mighty NATO alliance right next door, but that alliance has made it clear all along that it doesn't have any intention of intervening in the current conflict on Ukraine's side, notwithstanding the fact that politically and economically it has supported Ukraine and actually encouraged Ukraine's aspirations to be part of the West.
Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Michael Gordon. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
We'll have continuing coverage of the invasion of Ukraine over the weekend on our website, WSJ.com. That's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Trine Nori and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Kateri Yoakum, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.